Hi, I'm Femi Yoke. The FIFA Arab Cup has just got underway. 16 teams competing for this amazing cup. At the base, it's solid gold, covered in a map of the Arab world. Today on the stream, why we should be paying attention to this tournament. Helping us unpack the Arab Cup, we have Hassan Ain, we have Lee, we have Rob. Hassan Ain, I cannot think what team you could possibly be repping for, but please introduce yourself to our international audience. Tell them who you are, what you do.
First of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. I started my page, my website, my podcast, the Iraq Football Podcast, basically to get awareness out there about the Iraqi national team, especially in English, because unfortunately, when you put into Google Iraq or Iraqi football, everything is just negative. Mm-hmm. So I try to fix that and bring news to the world about Iraqi football.
Looking forward to hearing more from you in just a moment. Lee Wellings, might as well just move into the stream office. Hello, Lee. Welcome back to the stream. Remind our audience who you are, what you do.
So I've been a journalist and a broadcaster specialising in sport for 30 years and an author too. In fact, my first book, The Dilly Dog Bell, which is about sport and society, is coming out early next year, and it shows how I concentrate on a lot of matters off the pitch, not just what's happening on the pitch.
Oh, we have so many big gets on today's show. Hello, Rob. Tell everybody who you are, what you do.
Yeah, I'm just surprised Lee's not got all his books ready behind him to advertise it to the world. I'm a global sports correspondent with the Associated Press, covering a lot of particularly football matters on and off the pitch. So that means a lot of the football politics, how things all intersect with the geopolitics of the world, but also the fun as well, the World Cups, the Olympics, and particularly for the last decade or so, the bidding process for the World Cup and the preparation for the World Cup in Qatar next year.
All right, three excellent experts and you, audience, as well. If you're on YouTube right now, the comments section is open for your punditry. Jump into the comments section and hopefully I'll be able to bring you into today's show. The Arab Cup has quite a patchy history, started back in the 1960s, and it pops up every now and again, not regularly, but let's do some boasting, Hassan Ain, for the team that you love and rep. Iraq has won more Arab Cups than any other nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether we can extend our victories to five cups, I don't know. It seems unlikely at the moment, given how we played earlier today.
Oh, but the 1-1 penalty, just
yeah,
getting through.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was lucky that VAR was used and the result fortunately went our way. But I mean, we hold the record in terms of the most wins. We won the Arab Cup four times. The cup has a special place for all Iraqis. So it's exciting times for all of Iraq.
I'm just thinking here of the Arab Cup as a tournament, Lee. How important is it?
Well, it's creating huge excitement. There's no doubt about that in the Middle East and North African region. The big challenge for the tournament and then leading into next year is to increase excitement globally. Yeah. This is obviously a tournament that's a really important test event in many ways for FIFA. It used to be called the Confederations Cup, their test event, but now they're using this tournament. There's a lot invested in it. And I think a real key is for the standard of football and for the excitement that's produced to actually get people engaged beyond the region. This is what needs to start happening. It's not being shown in the UK, I have to tell you. Or at least if it is, I haven't found it and I've been looking. So there needs to be things that happen that, you know, create clips on social media. Get people excited about it, because I think the high standards that can be found in this football need to get a wider audience than just the MENA region.
Rob, I'm going to play you a clip from Abdul Qadar. We spoke to him a little bit earlier on the stream. Have a listen to what he has to say, then bounce immediately off the back of him with your thoughts. Here's Abdul Qadar.
The Arab Cup is back, and after being recognised and organised by FIFA, this has brought unprecedented attention to the tournament. Many sponsors are now involved, which means lucrative prize money for all the nations involved. 16 nations will battle it out in Doha, and it'll be a chance for the world to see the venues that will be used for the World Cup next year. With regards to the favourites, I think Algeria, due to their 33 unbeaten streak, are probably the favourites for the tournament, with honourable mentions for Egypt, Morocco, and of course hosts Qatar, who have a chance of fighting for the tournament. On a personal note, my nation, Sudan, will be participating, and I hope the players can give the nation something to cheer about after the recent political events in the country.
God, that's so much a reflection of the hope that football can bring to the region. For Qatar, I think it's a great chance for them to try to prove their credentials on the pitch. They had that really amazing run to win the Asian Cup in 2019. They've not really had any competitive games since then because, of course, qualifying for the World Cup automatically as host. And, of course, incredibly, it'll be their World Cup debut when they are the host. So they've been playing games in Europe recently against the likes of Ireland, who they lost to. So there's been the struggles, but this is a chance to be able to show their credentials, for the players to get a flavour of what it's like to perform at a tournament on a home soil like that. So they're actually ready for next year, because it's going to be a huge moment for them in a year's time. And they weren't quite the same atmosphere this time.
There's no appreciation, is there, of what they achieve, what they achieved in winning the Asian Confederation Tournament. That's something that the word hasn't been spread everywhere about how good that Qatar team is. And of course, the fact they're hosts next year will give them a chance of doing really well in the tournament, won't it?
Yeah, I think they've not really heard that much from the players. There's probably a bit of a reticence for the players necessarily to build a profile, to speak to the wider media, because they will perhaps fear getting questions that are beyond their remit, whether it's on human rights or about Qatar as a country, rather than them as footballers. Yet it is a chance perhaps in the next year to actually start to see Qatar as a football team, because this perception was around the bid a decade or so ago. And since then, that sort of Qatar has no football heritage, where actually there has been a league going back many decades. There is history of football there. They're just not a big country physically, just like Iceland had only qualified for a major tournament the first time at Euro 2016. So countries do have to take their time often to get the chance to be at tournaments. But, you know, we saw in 2019 at the Asian Cup just what they can do. That was a tournament nearby, obviously, in the UAE. And this is it's a chance for the players. They need as much game time as possible, and this can offer it.
Hassanein, I'm just looking at the draw result for the FIFA Arab Cup 2021. You are in the same Group A as Qatar, Oman, Bahrain as well. How do you think you're going to do in Group A?
It really can go any way. I think Qatar will be favourites, obviously. They're a very good team. They won the Asian Cup in 2019. They've played a lot of competitive games recently against big European sides like Portugal and Ireland. And it's going to be interesting to see how they cope without having played a real competitive match in a long time. But they've got a very experienced squad, and they will be favourites for the whole cup, not just qualifying from Group A. Mm-hmm. For the other three teams there, we saw today, Oman, organised team. They're good in terms of maintaining good shape defensively. Iraq, it's... We're not amazing.
It's painful. But, I can tell you the pain that you're having to say. Your team's not that great right now. There's time, right? Let me move on.
Major nations missing out on some players, such as most notably Mo Salah.
Yes,
Egypt,
I thought this is a bit cheeky using Mo Salah's image, right, when he's not actually playing in the FIFA Arab Cup. And that reason for that is because this cup or this tournament comes when there are lots of other European leagues playing. Some of the biggest stars are playing in those leagues and they're not going to release their players, Lee.
Yeah, well, it's a chaotic football calendar anyway at the moment, with some tournaments being shoehorned in, like the Club World Cup, which is going to take place in a couple of months' time. We've got the Africa Cup of Nations, which is coming up in January. And some of the nations here, of course, will be playing in that. But I think usually we're used to, you know, Morocco and Egypt and Algeria, as mentioned by Hassanein, being really powerful. With some big stars being missing because of the reasons you mentioned, there is going to be more of a chance for, you know, a nation like Iraq. I know you've got a brilliant record in the tournament, but who are perhaps not absolutely at the top of your form at the moment, to actually, you know, it's not how you start a tournament, it's how you finish.
Yeah, but I would add, Lee, that we actually were missing a large number of players. We have a lot of players based in Sweden. We have a few players based in the UK, in Denmark. And unfortunately, the fact that these players weren't able to be released by their clubs has actually impacted us in the same way I'd say teams like Algeria have. So it is a bit of a confusing situation because, I mean, obviously FIFA have kind of taken control of this tournament. They're now the organisers, and yet the players still haven't been released, and it's seen as a friendly.
One of the reasons for this is it's out of the players' hands, really, because not to delve too much into the complexities, but the annual football calendar is set out every year in terms of agreements between clubs and leagues all around the world, and they set out through the year, these are the windows when the clubs who pay the players have to release them to international tournaments or qualifiers. So it states, well, there's a World Cup there and European Championship or an Asian Cup. Clubs have to release their players or they'll get punished potentially. This is an extra tournament, so it didn't exist even when this calendar was being formed. So there was no way of mandating Liverpool to release Mo Salah, particularly when they're already going to lose him for the AFCON in a few weeks' time as well. It started January. So, gents, the players' wishes are out of their hands.
All right, so, gents, let me move on a bit, because to explain why this extra tournament is happening is because in a year's time, we are going to be talking about the FIFA World Cup. This basically is a dress rehearsal. The Arab Cup is a dress rehearsal for next year, being held in exactly the same country, in the same stadiums. I want to bring up Jo Gasiorowska. She has been looking at some of the most fascinating stadia across Qatar, and this one is Stadium 974. Take a look.
The first thing fans will notice when they arrive at Stadium 974 is that it looks a bit like it was constructed using children's building blocks.
And that's not entirely too far from the truth, just on a much bigger scale. This stadium has been put together with 974 shipping containers, 40,000 seats, and a metal structure. They call this a modular stadium. It has its advantages. It keeps costs low, it lowers the number of building materials they need to use, and it can be put up relatively quickly.
Hassanein, I know that you have been in Qatar quite recently. How ready do you think Qatar is for not just the Arab Cup, that's underway already, but for next year, a year out for the FIFA World Cup?
I think Qatar is very close to where it needs to be. When I arrived to Qatar, I was shocked at how amazing the infrastructure is, how perfect the airport was. But there were still some little deficiencies in terms of administration things. So, for example, it took me ages to actually get the Ihtiraz up and running. So a lot of issues are related to COVID. And I think this is an important run for Qatar to kind of identify where the problems are and then solve it in time for all the hundreds of thousands of fans that will inevitably make their way to Qatar.
A couple of questions here on YouTube. Obviously, that people are going to be asking about the situation with labour rights, human rights, Lee, on YouTube. People are asking that right now. I know a lot of work has been done in that area. Tell us more.
Well, I've covered this extensively over the years. And actually, I saw a quote that I hadn't seen before from the head of the International Labour Organization in Doha, who said, "We've been in Doha for 3.5 years. Obviously, you know, a lot happened before that, but that's how long they've been there. And we've seen real progress and change during this period. But at the same time, we recognize there's a lot of work still to be done." Now, if that same comment had come from the organizers, you could imagine it being plausible. So actually what we've got here is there isn't that much of a difference between those who are rightly looking into the situation and saying that conditions need to improve and what you'd hear from those who are actually running the tournament. What I'd like to see from them, Femi, I'd like to see the engaging with people around the world on this and not being defensive about it. The truth is the truth is the truth. So if there are issues still there, address them, be open about them, talk about them openly, because we know that progress is being made in the Middle East, but we also know that it is an extremely difficult situation for a worker from Nepal, Bangladesh, Pakistan, who's coming in and dealing with these conditions. We know that they've improved, but more still needs to be done. And I think that's where we are. And I think that actually it's time to make sure that there isn't this kind of almost feel that journalists around the world are picking on Qatar by actually bringing up these issues. These issues need to be discussed openly.
I'm just...
And it's about how...
Yes, Rob, go ahead.
it's about how much as well that the changes are enforced. So Qatar is often lumped together in terms of assessments of working conditions, whereas the World Cup organisers themselves put in more stringent labour conditions and regulations before the wider country did. Then there were changes to the labour laws across Qatar. Now there are still issues with wider companies building the infrastructure, making sure workers are paid, that they're not having to pay for the right to go to work in the country. They do get their passports back, they can switch jobs. And those are the things that are highlighted. Right. But undoubtedly, Qatar has changed in a way unimaginable at the time that the World Cup was awarded. That's not necessarily the reason to give a tournament to a country, but the pressure from human rights groups and from the media has actually accelerated a pace of change. So the organisers of the World Cup have to acknowledge the fact there has been criticism, but on the other hand, they point to that criticism at the likes of FIFA and rights groups to say it has delivered some meaningful change to actually improve working conditions. But it's going to be massively in the spotlight over the next year or so, particularly building up to the tournament, particularly when there's so many projects as well from smaller companies that are distant removed from the World Cup organisers themselves. But everything does get characterised, of course, as the World Cup preparations.
Hussein, and I'm looking here on my laptop. The new minimum wage has come into effect today, the first of its kind in the Middle East. And then if I go onto a government website, I can also see in focus labour reform. Do you think that this issue with labour rights is going to, one, impact the Arab Cup and then impact the World Cup next year?
It inevitably will, because there has been a systematic attack on Qatar. But what people fail to mention is that Qatar is a country in its infancy, and there will inevitably be issues and problems within how the country operates. This is normal. But what is a problem for me is that we have all these Western countries and Western media attacking Qatar when these countries themselves are built on slave trades.
I need to come in there because Rob and I have been had the privilege of covering this from the start in 2010. It's actually 11 years, an unprecedented situation with awarding two World Cups at the same time, one in Russia 2018 and one in Qatar. Controversially, the whole process with a FIFA executive committee, of course, that we know the issues of corruption around them. I think what's happened is Qatar has found itself in a position where from the start it has had to be, understandably, cautious and defensive, and in a position where it's defending its right to host the tournament. We're now 11 years on, and it's the time to actually start embracing it, or why bother at all? To start actually showing some of the joy and spirit in what's happening in the tournament and the construction of it and the games that will take place that we haven't really seen over the past few years. When this tournament kicks off, and I mean the World Cup, not the FIFA Arab Cup, it will be a success because that's what happened with World Cups. And this is a compact tournament that journalists will, I think, appreciate. 32 teams still before the expansion to 48. But the next few months, there will be a lot of turbulence. There will be a big spotlight. And there's no agenda around the globe. It's only right that in Scandinavia or Germany or the UK or Australia or wherever that there are questions asked about this tournament. And I think those questions have to be accepted and answered honestly.
All right.
And it's not been answered in many parts. We've had a lot of footballers obviously protesting from March onwards with vague human rights T-shirts, but the government themselves in Doha haven't sort of come out to really tell their story necessarily to sort of talk through the reforms. The fact you're showing tweets and websites, the announcements can be quite dry and we're not necessarily getting the substance of detail. And just picking up on that previous point about Qatar being a young country, it can't be expected necessarily to meet perhaps other standards. Well, we're not talking about some complex matters. Some of the issues over the last few years about our workers being made to be out in the heat too long. They've had to put new rules around that, particularly in the fierce summer heat. Are they being paid properly and on time? These are sort of basic standards. And yes, there are always some criticisms of the West, just even overnight in the last 24 hours. Charles out in Barbados apologising for Britain's past role in slavery.
All right, let's move away from Prince Charles and back to Qatar, if it's OK. I want to bring in Mahfoud Amara. I hear the point you're making, Rob, but I want to move back from Mahfoud Amara because he's hitting on something that, Hassan Ayn, I think that you're going in the same direction, which is the first FIFA World Cup in the Middle East, right? That is exceptional. Are we missing that story? Here's Mahfoud. When you hear the end of the video, please respond.
It is going to be also an occasion for communities who are living here in Qatar to celebrate their diversity, to celebrate their Arab identity, and also to to support their national teams who are going to come here. Qatar promised that this event is not only for Qatar, but it's for the whole Arab region. And this is really will be an interesting, a golden opportunity to celebrate that.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely spot on. I think this is a tournament that needs to happen in terms of it not only being recognized by FIFA, but it being a games that will be broadcasted internationally. And Arab football needs this. We have a lot of talented players across the Arab world, and we need the games to be broadcasted. We need coverage to encourage scouts and other countries to actually see the talents we have, hopefully giving a chance to some of our better players from the Arab world going into different leagues, expanding, improving clubs. And that will lead to the gradual development and improvement of Arab football.
Rob, very briefly, because I'm going to get you your guests to actually come in and tell me who you predict will win the Arab Cup. But I'll give you a moment to have a thought about that. Rob, very quickly, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things this tournament won't get to do is to stress test fully lots of fans coming in from so many different parts of the world. It will get to test full of stadiums, but that's going to be a huge thing that's going to be a culture shock for Qatar in a year's time. What is good, it is a Middle East celebration. It should be the lifting of the boycott of Qatar does actually enable travel across the region in a year, which looked in doubt even up to a year ago. And what I do take issue with, some of those from around the world who complained about having to move the tournament to November, December, when the world's game needs to accommodate the world by staging a tournament at a different time to be able to accommodate different climatic conditions. So the Mideast gets a chance to stage a World Cup when it's such a hotbed of football passion and fans. It's just all the process behind it was so
fraught. Let's ring in the fan voices. All right, fans are never afraid to predict who is going to win a tournament. All right, so we spoke to some fans about the Arab Cup. This is what they told us then immediately. Hassanan, Lee, Rob, I want your predictions as well. Let's go to the fans first.
Morocco is in my heart. Morocco is in my DNA. Morocco is my team. Morocco is my nation. I'm proud of it. Let me explain to you guys why Morocco will win this Arab Cup for sure. Morocco has recently have won the African Cup of Nations for localized players. Those players are the same players that will participate at the Arab Cup. Those players know how to win.
In this tournament, I will be cheering my home country, Lebanon, in their big games versus Egypt, Algeria, and Sudan. In the end, I think Qatar will win it all. Yalla, Lebanon!
The thing I'm looking forward to the most at the FIFA Arab Cup is to see how Palestine gets on in a pretty difficult group. In my opinion, we're victims of our own success. We had players score in Croatia, Portugal, and Switzerland over the weekend, but because the Arab Cup isn't within FIFA's international match day calendar, we weren't able to call up all these players into our squad. As such, I think the team most likely to win this tournament is one that can navigate these types of problems, one with a good amount of depth, probably one of the North African sides. And if I'm pushed to pick a winner, I'd go with Tunisia.
Oh, the fans are bold, but are the guests bold? You can only say one country. Hassanein, go ahead.
Easily Tunis, I think they'll be the winners.
All right, they won today, November the 30th, first day.
Comfortably.
All right, comfortably. All right, Tunis, league, name a country, name a team.
Tunisia as well. I want to be different, but I think Qatar or Tunisia. Qatar with the
Qatar
host. Qatar
or Tunisia. All right. Tunisia home advantage, home team advantage. Rob, quick, go ahead. He's going to win.
I'm going to go with Qatar because Abdelaziz Hatem scored today in the win against Bahrain. He also scored in the Asian Cup final win over Japan in 2019. So I think the conditions are well placed for Qatar to and another trophy.
Gents, I love your boldness. Hassanein, Lee, Rob, thank you for talking to us about the FIFA Arab Cup and also what it means for the FIFA World Cup in 12 months' time. Have a look here on my laptop. This is from AJ Plus. It's beautiful. Everything you need to know about the 2021 FIFA Arab Cup. And it's from AJ Labs, at AJ Labs on Twitter. You will find this beautiful, beautiful visualization. Everything you need to know about the FIFA Arab Cup. Thanks for watching. See you next time. Take care, everybody.